Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, rolling into the happier happy hour. And Dominic, I am happy to announce we've got pollster extraordinaire Charles Franklin live via phone, New Marquette University Law School polling. That is the gold standard here in the great state of Wisconsin. And of course, we just had a partisan primary and we got the pollster himself, Charles Franklin. Welcome back, Charles. Perhaps the funnest poll of the year, the one immediately after the partisan primary.
Hey, Charles.
Oh, yeah, we're kicking things off. And, you know, a little politics. What's better in August?
Well, you know, some people go on vacation, but we keep doing it, us political junkies. Charles, let's talk about the big races. We determined a nominee, the Democrats did, for the U.S. Senate race. And it became a little less dramatic at the end of the race, but Mandela Barnes is the nominee for the Dems. And, of course, the incumbent is U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. And the first head-to-head polling, at least since the nominee has been, you know, anointed. How's Mandela doing against Rojo?
He's doing pretty well. 51 for Barnes, 44 for Johnson, a 7-point margin. That's up from Barnes's 2-point lead in June. And I think in part it reflects the way the primary ended with uniting of the party, endorsements from his primary opponents. And I think across the board, you can see that Barnes enters this race with some pretty favorable views. The one caveat is between 25% and 40% say they don't know enough about him on particular questions. So there's lots of room to shape that image. But the people that have an opinion of him right now are quite positive, and that's reflected in the vote, giving him a 7-point lead at this point.
Well, and he's also leading substantially in the net favorable, unfavorable. When you look at Mandela's favorable, unfavorable, and you compare it with Ron Johnson's, I mean, Mandela's way above water, and Ron's way underwater.
No, and this is very consistent. Just what you said on favorability, Mandela well ahead, Ron Johnson underwater. But it's also true of cares about people like you. Net positive by quite a bit for Barnes, net negative for Johnson, and shares your values. Positive for Barnes, negative for Johnson. As I say on these questions, 23% or so say they don't know enough about Barnes to know whether he cares or shares their values. And it's higher, 41%. Said they didn't know enough about him to give a favorable or unfavorable opinion. So there lies the campaign and how those folks come to know him. But at this stage, the people that know him like him quite a bit across all three of these questions.
Charles, one note that I saw in here, the other independent run for governor, Joan Beglinger, pulling at 7%. And we were talking about this earlier. That seems high for an independent, Charles. Do you have any context for that number?
Yeah. Well, there are two parts. One is it's common for independents to poll well at the beginning of a general election campaign, before the campaign, you know, reaches its peak in October. So we'll see what her trajectory looks like. But one thing I found interesting was that in June, 12% said they wanted somebody else, didn't know, refused to answer the question, and wouldn't pick one of the two-party nominees. This time, with her on the ballot and getting 7%, the total that wanted somebody other than the party candidates, also 12%. So it doesn't look like her being included in the ballot this time, in the survey ballot this time, didn't change the support for the two party candidates together. They got basically the same thing. But she soaked up much of that 12% that wasn't ready in June to pick one of the major party candidates. 12% not ready to do that now. She's getting 7% of that. But as we go from registered voters, where she's at 7, to likely voters, her support drops off to 4% with likely voters. So, you know, pay some attention to this and see what role she might play going through the fall. But she is where she is, and she got herself on the ballot. And, you know, kudos to her for succeeding in that and for picking up 7% in this survey.
Well, Charles, just for clarification's sake, because I don't want to confuse the audience, the independent candidate is not in the U.S. Senate race. She is in the gubernatorial race, correct? And that race has Tim Michaels, and it has obviously the incumbent, Tony Evers, and that is a much closer race. I mean, Mandela's got a substantial lead. The margin of error is greater than Tony Evers' margin over Tim Michaels when you factor in that independent.
Well, absolutely. And sorry, we did shift races there without noticing it to everybody. Yeah, it's a 2-point race in the governor's side. That's inside the margin of error, which is 4.2%. And that's a tightening of the race. In June, Evers had a 7-point lead. Now it's a 2-point lead, you know, a 5-point shift, and, you know, net in Michael's favor. But my point was that the independent or the undecided want somebody else numbers in total didn't change over that time is really in the governor's race that the two party candidates were getting the same share. But a closer margin, I think there you're seeing Michaels maybe benefiting from his party primary, which certainly did a lot to introduce him to voters who hadn't heard anything of him since 2004 when he ran the last time. And I think a spirited competition in the Republican primary, but it looks like Republicans are just as united behind Michaels as Democrats are behind Evers. It's the independents who are going a little bit for Evers by about 4 points that are making some of the difference for why Evers is ahead in that race. The partisans are pretty solid, and there's not much difference, a couple of point difference in the crossover vote for governor.
Charles, I also noted the Mandela Barnes campaign was bragging about the fact that they are winning independents over Ron Johnson by 14%. That seemingly is certainly would be the margin of victory in this state.
Oh, absolutely, because remember that there's only 1% difference in the parties. Republicans have 44% of 45% of the electorate, Democrats 44%. If you take out leaners, it's 30-29. There's a very even party balance here. And when the parties are equally united, as they are right now in both of these races, it really puts it on independents. Barnes is doing far better with independents than Evers is with independents. And it's exactly the same people answering the question. So this is where Barnes at the moment has a real strong performance, and where Johnson is suffering with independents. But I keep reminding folks that it's a long ways to November, and the campaign is going to be a big question of whether independents stay where they are now or shift. Could be to run up the score for Barnes, but it could be to pull his numbers back down a bit as the campaign progresses. Stay tuned.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Charles Franklin, a pollster extraordinaire, Marquette University Law School polling, joins us. Always a pleasure, Charles. Thank you for doing so. What I've noticed, the increase in support of independents towards Mandela Barnes from the last poll, well, there have been some hearings. The January 6th hearings have occurred since then. Do we have any sense of what the impact is, where people are thinking about the January 6th hearings and how they look at the elections here in the state of Wisconsin?
Right. Not so much on the impact of elections. The one thing that I thought was important is that over half of all the party groups say they've heard a lot about the January 6th hearings. It's higher, 70% with Democrats, but it's still 53% of Republicans. So in that sense, the message of the fact of the hearings and the testimony is being paid attention to across the board. The interpretation, though, is hugely different. Just 8% of Republicans say Trump bears a lot of responsibility for the violence on January 6th. 62% of Republicans say he bears no responsibility at all. But among independents, it's 46% a lot, 29 nothing, and among Democrats, 89-2. So Republicans and Democrats are somewhat similar in their exposure to the hearings, but their takeaways from the content is just dramatically different. That's hardly a surprise given our party splits and Donald Trump's unique polarizing character. The same thing we find in favorability, 77% of Republicans are favorable to Trump. It's a little lower than that among Democrats. But on want Trump to run again in 2024, what was 77% favorable to Trump with Republicans drops to 59% of Republicans wanting him to run again. So if you're looking at any impact, whether it's the hearings or the emergence of other alternatives that are popular in the GOP, I think that is an interesting gap between 77 favorable but 59 want him to run again. Now, 59% of your party will certainly get you the nomination if you choose to run. But it is worth noting there is some slippage there.
Hey, Charles Franklin, I know you're a wanted man on polling days. Do you got 8 more minutes for us?
For you? Sure.
Awesome, man, because I know you polled on abortion, and I know the overturning of Roe v. Wade perhaps is moving the electorate. Certainly, they have strong opinions. Charles, we want to find out about it going inside the Marquette University Law School polling numbers with our good friend Charles Franklin. More Devil's Advocates. We'll be right back.
Advocates, so relevant they have 1 foot in tomorrow.
Night. And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. If you missed any of this fine program, you can go online to darnwi.com and listen to download podcasts and interviews.
Dominic, coming up very, very soon, my congressman Mark Pocan joins us at 5:30. Right now, we got Charles Franklin. He's generously stuck around. He is the pollster extraordinaire from the Marquette University Law School poll. And Charles, I'm downright giddy. New polling dropped today. Always appreciate you coming round, sir. Here's my question. The abortion issue, the overturning of Roe v. Wade. What has this done to the electorate? And overall, what are the public sentiment on the overturning of Roe v. Wade amongst Wisconsin voters, at least?
Yeah, I think this is obviously an important question, and I think the data are kind of interesting. First of all, of the 9 issues we asked about, abortion ranks 4th in that list. So it's above the middle, but it's only a little above the middle. It's not an overwhelming issue. It is rated considerably higher by Democrats and not so much by Republicans. So I think that's an interesting shift from some of the past. When we ask about the Supreme Court decision, 79% say they've heard a lot about the decision. So it's clearly very much in people's minds. Did you favor overturning Roe? 33%. Opposed to overturning it? 60%. And 7 don't know. And in the question of how, what should be legal and illegal, we ask a question, should it be legal in all cases, legal in most, illegal in most, or illegal in all? We've been asking this for a decade now. And 65% say legal in all or most. 30% say illegal in all or most cases. But over 10 years, we've seen very little change in that question. On this survey, there's about a 5-point drop on the illegal side and about a 5-point increase in the legal side, whether always or in most cases. So there is a shift there, and that shift is true across the party divide, where Republicans, for example, went from 20% saying illegal in all cases in June down to 10% saying that. So I think there's a little shift on the Republican side in opposition. Now, Republicans are certainly more favorable to overturning Roe. They're also a majority opposed to legal abortions. But there's a little bit of shift there. And then finally, and maybe the most important question is, should there be legal abortions in cases of rape and incest, which, remember, is not allowed in the state's 1849 law if that goes into effect? 88% say abortion should be legal in those cases. Just 8% say it should not. But that includes 79% of Republicans, 87% of independents, and 97% of Democrats. In a lot of this survey, including on when abortion should be legal or not, there are big partisan differences that go in exactly the way you expect them to. But on this question of a rape and incest exception, the public is remarkably united. I think that 88% is as big as we've ever seen for a particular issue. And the fact that it includes 79% of Republicans raises real questions coming through the fall about what candidates are ready to do about Wisconsin's 1849 law, or if they're willing to do nothing and let it go into effect with this ban, including banning rape and incest exceptions. There's a ton of other arguments about when it should be permitted and when it shouldn't be, and partisan differences are more clear there. But on this question of rape and incest exceptions, the data is just extremely clear.
Well, that would leave GOP gubernatorial nominee Tim Michaels in a very small minority, if I understand the math. If 88% of Wisconsinites believe there should be exceptions, that puts him in the 12%. Our fine guest, Charles Franklin, for a few more minutes. Charles, here's my question. Has the overturning of Roe v. Wade engaged Team Blue? Is that changed the electorate, or is it engaging the pro-life faction, let's call it Team Red?
No, it looks like it's more effective with Democrats than Republicans. The pro-life faction of the Republican Party has been incredibly strong in GOP politics, but it's not rated as a highly important issue among Republicans right now. Not unimportant, but not nearly as high as Democrats. The other thing is we saw a closing of the enthusiasm gap to about voting. In the winter and spring, the two parties were pretty close to each other on that. In June, though, Republicans picked up a considerable advantage. But this month, Republican enthusiasm hasn't changed, and Democratic enthusiasm went up 10 points. More importantly, people saying they're absolutely certain to vote, there's just a 1-point difference, 83 for Republicans, 82% of Democrats. So what matters is whether you go to the polls or not, whether enthusiastically or not. If this absolutely certain to vote opinion holds up, then we're not seeing meaningful differences in mobilization of the parties. Long time till November, but right now there is no enthusiasm gap or turnout gap in Wisconsin.
Charles, back in 2016, Russ Feingold was the Democratic nominee. Obviously, Ron Johnson won that race. And Evers Walker, do you recall where those races stood at approximately this time in history?
Sure. Well, first of all, Feingold had a substantial lead through the spring, but it plateaued over the summer, and Johnson closed that gap in August, September, early October, and by our final pre-election poll, it was a toss-up. It was a one-point race. Johnson went on to win by three. So there was a very clear trajectory to that campaign. In the 2018 governor's race, Walker had a small advantage early on that tightened, and in our final poll, it was a dead toss-up. They got exactly the same vote in the poll.
Thank you, Charles Franklin. Sorry to cut you short. More Devils with Mark Pocan.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal, only politics.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates, the Wednesday edition. I want to thank our most recent guests, a fine one, Marquette University Law School pollster, Charles Franklin, friend of ours. Now we welcome my congressman, our friend, Mark Pocan. As soon as I get you there. Mark, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates. How you doing, hey, my Mark. Friend?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, always great to have you come around, Congressman. Before we jump into the newest congressional action, Mark, got to ask you about the election, the primary election that happened in our backyard. Your old friend, Robin Voss, had the political fight of his career. Donald Trump came to town and endorsed his opponent, and it went late into the evening, and Voss won, and then he promptly fired Gableman. I want to get your opinion, Congressman.
It's kind of a double loss for Donald Trump, right? He endorsed against Robin Voss, and then his new BFF, Michael Gableman, is going to have to go back and work at Home Depot or wherever he was working. And, you know, it's a big... It's a big thing to have Donald Trump's endorsement in Republican Party primaries. I mean, he still plays well with the MAGA crowd. And, you know, we just saw it with, you know, Liz Cheney. And we've seen it in Wisconsin with Tim Michaels. And, you know, he picks the most extreme, least prepared people. And they sometimes win their primaries. And that's the state of the Republican Party these days.
Well, the newest polling out today, Mark, would seem to indicate Mandela Barnes is well positioned against Ron Johnson. And I know you enjoy sharing the congressional delegation with Ron, but it'd be a real heartbreaker if the Democrats won a larger senatorial majority in the fall. If Ron Johnson fell, I'm sure that'd break your heart, Mark.
Well, I mean, look, Mandela's a terrific candidate. You know, he was a really great lieutenant governor. He was great in the legislature. But don't forget that poll represents none of the attack ads that are going to be coming on Mandela Barnes. So, you know, it is going to be a close race like every statewide race in Wisconsin pretty much is. And we have to be ready to fight like hell in order to win that. Just like the governor, you know, when we saw that was a 2-point race. Well, Tim Michaels was just up with a whole lot of TV for his primary. And, you know, Tony Evers hasn't been. So that probably makes sense that Tim Michaels was doing maybe a little better than you might expect. But both of these races are going to be close. And the only way that we make sure Ron Johnson's crackpot theories don't continue in the Senate and, you know, Connecticut resident multimillionaire Tim Michaels doesn't become governor of the wrong state is by making sure that we're all very, very active working towards November.
Congressman, normally I wouldn't have you wade into other congressional races, but we play out in the third CD now. Democrat Brad Pfaff is the nominee in the third CD, where Ron Kind is stepping down. He's not running for re-election. And Derek Van Orden, who is an insurrectionist, he is the Republican nominee. And we saw this guy, Mark, at the Trump rally a week ago Friday. I mean, this guy is like where Alex Jones meets WWE. This is a really scary character, Mark. And, you know, if you look at the last race, Ron Kind barely held that guy off.
Well, First of all, if he gets elected, Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to look pretty moderate, right? This is an extremist. There is no question. But here's what's happened since Ron Kind ran against him and Ron beat him by 20,000 votes in 2020. Since then, he attended the insurrection using his campaign account, which is likely illegal. He is on probation for trying to carry a loaded gun onto a plane in Iowa. He tweeted that the 10-year-old rape victim was likely lying, and then when it came out she hadn't been lying, all he could put was, "I stand corrected," which, for a guy who keeps reminding everyone he's a Navy SEAL, that's not exactly an honorable apology. And don't forget, at the Prairie du Chien Library, he got in a fight with a 17-year-old intern over an LGBTQ book display, and then he proceeded to check out all the books but one because someone was reading it with the intent not to return it. This guy, again, makes Marjorie Taylor Greene look a little bit normal. So, Brad Path is an excellent candidate. He's a state senator. He was the acting Secretary of Agriculture, and the Republicans refused to confirm him because he talked too aggressively about farmer suicide. So, like, this guy has been so good for farmers that Republicans couldn't even confirm him as a secretary, and that's when he ran for the state Senate. So I think we have a really great candidate. And we have a really awful one on the Republican side. We just have to be able to have the resources to get that messaging out.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Congressman Mark Pocan joining us via phone. Mark, always a pleasure to speak with you. I mean, we can sit here and spend hours and hours lamenting what the GOP has morphed into. But I want to talk about something positive for once, Mark. The Inflation Reduction Act. You tweeted out that this is a win for the American people, and a loss for special interests. Mark, would you please detail that for us?
So, this is the fourth big bill we've done this session, right? We did the American Rescue Plan that put money in people's pockets and put kids back into school safely, people into jobs, shots into arms. Then we passed the infrastructure bill that's going to create 1.5 million jobs. And, we've talked about it for decades. We finally did it. Then we did the CHIPS Act to try to make more of the production of computer chips back here in the United States, because that's been a huge, huge impact on car sales. And then the Inflation Reduction Act does something that is huge. It allows us to negotiate with prescription drug companies for drug prices via Medicare, which will provide big, big savings, and it caps out-of-pocket expenses for seniors on prescription drugs, so no more than $2,000 a year. And 13 million people will continue to receive some subsidies through the Affordable Care Act for health insurance access. And it will get us to 40% of our climate goals, to 40% reduction by 2030. And it will create jobs building solar cells and windmill blades and all the other sort of things right here in the United States. And we do it by having those who are the wealthiest and those who've often found how to game the system, corporations who pay almost no taxes, they're going to be paying for it because there's going to be a minimum corporate tax and a tax on stock buybacks that the ultra-wealthy take advantage of. So, I mean, there's a lot that was good in that bill, but that's the fourth major bill. Any other session, one of those bills would have been the significant piece for the session, and now we've done four of them.
Yeah, well done, Mark. Congratulations. I think it's nice to see governance happen once in a while. Another big part of that bill, the money dedicated for, attacking and fighting climate change. We just heard, yesterday, the Colorado River has a Tier 2 shortage. I mean, we have problems right now, Mark. Can you address any of the money being spent to address climate change?
And that's the thing, is it's getting us to a 40% reduction by 2030, which is very significant. My hope is that we're not past the point of no return. We know we're very close to it, but this has got us now tackling it. I think, there are more things that we will continue to try to do, but right now, this will help, has a bunch of incentives for people for renewables, to buy electric vehicles, to do all the things that we know we need to do to hit those goals. And it was so needed. And I got to tell you, the fact that, Joe Manchin allowed it to happen when we knew this was one of the areas that he wasn't especially good on, it goes to how strongly that, President Biden and the Senate Democrat leadership did in negotiating with him to get a good, strong bill.
Well, President Joe Biden handing Senator Manchin the pen was quite an amusing scene to my mind.
He said, I never had a doubt, right, Tom?
One other thing, though, Mark, you know, of course, the fiscal conservatives very concerned about the cost of this bill. Mark, how much does this add to the debt and deficit over the next 10 years?
Oh, you set me up. It reduces it. What Republicans always tell you they're going to do, we actually do, and we did in that bill. So we're actually reducing it because that was something Joe Manchin thought was important. So did Joe Biden, and that is in there. But also, again, it's paid for by people who've learned to game the system. Corporations that pay 1% or 2% effective rates when we all pay significantly more than that, it's giving them a minimum tax. And it's also going after those people who do the stock buybacks as ways for the ultra wealthy to be even wealthier. And it's bringing in revenue from that. So it did a bunch of things that we wanted to get done to build back better agenda. I'm glad that the Progressive Caucus held out as long as we did because it kept it alive to get to this point. And now we have some really strong provisions that make sure the average person isn't paying for this, but they are benefiting from this bill.
Folks, our good friend Mark Pocan, my congressman. Mark, got to ask you, Electoral College reform. I understood there was a legislative piece, and it's not going to solve all the problems, but it would make it much more difficult for, let's say, a Trump-like character to try and be instilled in the presidency, even if they didn't win. Mark, could you see one more legislative piece coming down the pike?
Yeah, I support electoral college reform, but I don't know if I honestly can tell you I see it coming down the pike. I mean, when you have a 50-50 Senate and a four-seat margin in the House that soon will become three seats, it's going to be hard to see a lot of more big things happen. I think you may have seen the big things happen for the session. We only gave you four of them. In addition to postal reform, by the way, which is guaranteeing six-day delivery, something Republicans have wanted to get rid of. But, you know, what I would really like to see, if we could, I just don't think there's going to be the ability for those same reasons I said, the tight margins, is something that deals with Social Security and Medicare. You know, Republicans, thanks to Ron Johnson, I love when he occasionally tells the truth, he wants to cut your benefits, what you've paid into out of your own paychecks into Social Security and Medicare. He now wants to put, instead of protecting it like we do now, he wants to put it on annual budgeting where annually it could be cut. And if we ever have a government shutdown, which we've had a few of, all those benefits would be frozen and stopped. That's Ron Johnson's idea of a good time. And I think, you know, for Democrats, we want to make that fund available in the future, increase the benefit for seniors. And there's a really great proposal out there that John Larson from Connecticut has. I think it's Social Security 2100. I support that. That's the bill I'd really like to see us get done, but I think it may be difficult with the margins and the time we have left.
Mark, the legislative successes that you have had, how do you connect that? Connect the dots for the American people. How do you sell this to the American people? Because I tell you what, I mean, Joe Biden has very low approval ratings, and I think he's had a fairly successful term. But people don't feel like that if the Democrats don't go out there and effectively message. So other than coming on the greatest radio show ever, Mark, how do you and your colleagues sell it to the American people?
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's face it. You know, COVID sucked. And coming out of COVID still sucks, right? You know, it's been tough for a lot of people. You know, first we had shutdowns and a pandemic and you know, all the death from COVID. And then, you know, we reopened and now we have global inflation because of COVID and we're still coming out of that. We've got supply chain issues that are driving people like me as a small business owner pretty crazy. There's a lot of reasons that people are not satisfied. And it's not Joe Biden's fault that there's worldwide, you know, inflation, for example. But he's the person who's the leader during this time. I think what we need to do is explain that we're putting people over politics. You know, all the proposals that I've talked about, $1,400 checks. We're in people's pockets. Everyone knows that. The fact that people were able to get vaccines, the fact that kids could go back to schools safely, the fact that we're creating the jobs and investing in infrastructure, we passed that. The fact that we're now going to lower prescription drug costs and lower costs out of pocket for seniors. I mean, those are all real things. What are Republicans about? Well, whatever MAGA, you know, wants, whatever Donald Trump decides for a very small extremist element within the Republican Party they want, that's the politics that they put forward. So it's fighting over things like the freedom to make your own decision over your body if you're a woman, the freedom to love who you want to love, depending on your sexual orientation. Go down the list of things that they're trying to play politics over versus the very real things we've got done. I think that's the contrast we need to make.
Congressman, final minute. I got to ask you, Liz Cheney lost her primary last night. It's got to feel weird. I was kind of rooting for her, Mark. How about you?
Well, I don't know that much about Wyoming politics. Because I'll just put it that way. But what I can tell you is, you know, I'm glad that she's going to continue to do what she's been doing in Congress, which, you know, she is a conservative Republican. She and I have many ideological differences, but she is someone that you can talk to and work with and who wants to expose Donald Trump for the damage he's doing to her party. I give her credit for that.
Mark Pocan, always give you credit for coming around. Thank you, Congressman. More Devil's Advocates. Hey, we'll be right back.
Thanks, Mark.
Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I lick you, bum, bum, bam. Take the mind, I say, say that I'm a stormy,
the Devil's Advocates. Radio for the 99%.
Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I lick you, bum, bum, bam.
So if you got something to say, you want to hit us up, 844-967-2789.
Dominic, I got a couple things to say. First and foremost, thank you, Congressman Mark Pocan. Always love when my congressman comes
He's
around.
Cool cat, man, like Mark.
Thank you, Evan, for playing that song. That's actually for Matt Gaetz's primary opponent, who's now accusing Matt Gaetz, you know, the congressman from Florida, of being the informant that led the FBI to the documents in Mar-a-Lago. And what's his proof?
I don't know, man. That's got to be a stretch.
Well, what's his proof, Dom?
What?
Trump didn't pardon him. So he must be the informant.
Trump didn't pardon lots of people.
Maybe we'll get to that very conspiratorial advertisement. It's pretty good stuff. But breaking news out of the state of Wisconsin, Journal Sentinel reporting... accomplished nothing. Judge admonishes Michael Gableman's 2020 election review, bars lawyers from case. A little bit from the Journal Sentinel. This just broke. For many months, former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman corrupted taxpayer-funded review of the 2020 presidential election that has not produced any evidence of substantive voter fraud, according to the judge, accomplished nothing, and that's a direct quote. Gableman didn't keep weekly progress reports as required by the Wisconsin State Assembly. He conducted no witness interviews, and he gathered no measurable data over at least a four-month span in 2020, the judge found. Well, we, the taxpayers, only paid him $44,000 over that time frame, and according to the judge. Instead, it gave its employees code names like Combs, or three, apparently for the sole purpose of emailing back and forth about news articles and drafts of speeches that from Dane County Circuit Judge Frank Remington in the opinion released today. A little bit more. It printed copies of reports that better investigators had already written. Remington added, although there's no evidence any person connected with the Office of Special Counsel ever read these reports, let alone critically analyze their factual and legal basis to draw his or her own principled conclusions.
My goodness.
The office did, however, again, according to the judge, commence lawsuits against other parts of our state and local government, although at the time of the writing, the OSC has received no relief. In other words, they haven't won anything.
That means they didn't win one of those cases?
They have not. Remington's comments were part of a Wednesday ruling denying a motion by the Assembly office to recuse himself. He's not going to recuse from presiding over the public records dispute between the liberal group American Oversight and the Office of Special Counsel. In the ruling, Remington admonished the Office of Special Counsel, five out of state attorneys. They admonished the five out of state attorneys, including prominent conservative attorney James Bopp, for their baseless claims about him and revoked their ability to represent the assembly office in the case. So that ain't Gableman's attorney anymore or the state's attorney. They have been barred from the courtroom. Its lawyers' arguments are wholly without merit, and together, their disobedience for the rule of law is contemptuous.
Oh, damn!
If this case were not on appeal, he added, this coming from the Judge Remington, I would sanction OCS and each of its seven lawyers for their specious legal arguments.
Damn, that's pretty good stuff. Remington described the Assembly's office motion for Remington to recuse himself from the case as a fever dream version of the facts of this case, in which the office never even bothers to invent an explanation for why I am supposedly biased. I mean, you know, go after the judge. That's always helpful, right? He broke down the arguments from Bopp and his co-counsel point by point, refuting claims such as that he threatened a witness when he suggested one of Gableman's staffers, who had been put in charge of handling requests for records, might need to think about getting his own attorney because of the possibility of jail time for disobeying court orders. Yeah, that's witness tampering, witness threatening, according to Bopp, right? Here's what Remington said. I revoke OSC's out-of-state attorney's pro hack vice admission because the motion to which they have signed their names applies phony legal principles to invented facts, wrote Remington, referring to the attorney's ability to practice law outside their admitted jurisdiction. Near every claim they make is frivolous under Wisconsin law. Near every claim they make is frivolous under Wisconsin law. And Robin Voss, who won by 260 votes, appointed him, hired him, decided this was my man.
But he has no
from Amsterdam.
He has no regrets.
No regrets.
No regrets. Even though he describes him as an embarrassment to the state of Wisconsin.
But no regrets.
No regrets. Let's get to the phones. Our fine audience, speed round style, 844-967-2789. Wisco Paul, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, Paulie.
Hi, Devils. This is officially the Trump party, correct, with Gableman?
Oh, yeah.
And with Cheney. So,
Magger bus, baby.
So, this is no longer the GOP. It is officially the Trump party, and they have all his baggage. And in this state, Gableman and Voss.
Wisco, they came to Wisconsin. One of Trump's warm-up speakers made that very statement at the Trump-Michaels rally that week ago Friday. He said, effectively, the old Republican Party, the one that was born in Ripon, Wisconsin, is dead, and Donald Trump killed it coming down that escalator in 2015.
Yeah,
this
said it was
is Donald Trump's
Trump
party.
Tower.
That's totally unbelievable. Well, at least I can put the rest ever voting for a Republican again. So, that's just, how can anybody, I don't know how anybody can support this.
We're going to keep moving down the phones. Wisco, you seem a little tongue-tied. Dick from Madison, and give you about a minute, Dick.
Hey, Dick.
Oh, man, Wisco's on spot on as usual. Spot on. I'm just wondering, does anybody see what Pence did today as anything? I mean, he finally broke from the guy.
When he testifies before the January 6th commission, then we're on to something. Up until that day.
Okay.
He's just covering his ass, Dick.
He's considering
I agree.
Maybe it'll happen, Dick. It's totally possible.
But it's still huge what he said, because you know it's going to incite craziness from the orange man.
They already want to hang the man. What's the worst that could happen?
Hang my pants? They actually hang the man?
Let's sneak one more in. Mark, we can give you like 30 seconds.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, guys, when is Voss going to start belting out the old Frank Sinatra standard, I did it my way? Because apparently he's got no regrets or only got a few in hiring, corrupted Judge Gableman. And as far as the sheriff down in Racine County and his cloak and spirit,
whole
fake request for absentee ballots, both of them should, that sheriff should be removed from office because he apparently, was part of a conspiracy.
Well, I don't disagree with you, Mark, and let's not forget U.S. Senator Ron Johnson thinks that Waite's an American hero for fraudulently breaking election laws and getting Robin Voss and other people's ballots. Thank you to our fine guests today. They included Charles Franklin, Marquette University Law School pollster, and Mark Pocan, our fine congressman. Stick around. Native Roots Radio is next.
I think people will do what's right. They don't need a government mandate to do that.
Okay. Not gonna work here anymore anyway.